live and local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost thing, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to have the opportunity to play at home, to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Bases loaded, two out, 2-2 pitch, off speed, again, hit high and deep to right field. Tinglestad will watch it go. A grand slam for Antoine Duplantis. And the Tigers take control here in the bottom of the eighth inning. Second home run of the night for Antoine Duplantis, make it 12-7 LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, as well as on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, as always, 337-706-0111. That is 337-706-0111. Woo! Conference tournament baseball begins today. Or tonight, rather, for our teams that we care about. SEC tournament begins in Hoover, lovely Hoover, Alabama. LSU, of course, is the 5 seed. They'll be taking on the 12 seed, South Carolina. That is the last game to be played today. Weather permitting, first pitch is scheduled for 8 o'clock, as we all know. The likelihood of that game starting at 8 o'clock is slim to none. That said, you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game as LSU takes on South Carolina. Single elimination. Winner gets to advance to Wednesday. We'll play Mississippi State, who's the 4 seed, and that begins the double elimination portion of the SEC tournament. The Ragin' Cajuns are in the same boat. They're in Conway, South Carolina. They'll be taking on Appalachian State tonight. First pitch around 6:10. That's the single elimination portion of that tournament as well. Winner moves on. But let's start off with the LSU Tigers. We'll break down tonight's game. But let's give a big round of applause for the SEC, finally, awarding former Lafayette High star Antoine Duplantis with all conference honors. That's right. It finally happened. Duplantis, the senior right fielder, was named second team All-SEC yesterday by a vote of the league's 14 coaches. Junior outfielder Zach Watson was named to the SEC All-Defensive Team for the second straight year. And right-handed pitcher Cole Henry, who will be making the start tonight against South Carolina after being essentially on the bench due to injury for about the better part of a month, he was voted to the freshman All-SEC squad. Duplantis, the former Mighty Lion, is hitting .318 on the season with 6 doubles, a pair of triples, 11 home runs, 58 RBIs, and 52 runs scored. He is number 7 in the SEC in hits this season and is number 6 in the league in RBIs. He's also raised his career hits total to 342, which is second on the all-time hits list. He just needs 11 more hits to become LSU's all-time leader. Former first baseman Eddie Furness holds that distinction with 352. Duplantis is already the SEC's all-time leader in at-bats with 1,061 in his four-year career. That previous SEC career at-bats leader was held by Preston Tucker of Florida. So finally, Antoine Duplantis received some love. They talked about it at Media Day earlier this year, about the curious case of Antoine Duplantis not having received any all-conference accolades. Despite where he has positioned himself in the record books, despite the fact that he's consistent year in and year out, he's never received that kind of love. It finally happened as a senior. He only got second team, but we'll take it. Watson, meanwhile, is batting .317 this season with 16 doubles, 5 home runs, and 31 RBIs. He also has 11 steals and 11 attempts and is known as one of the best defensive outfielders in the league. Henry, the native of Florence, Alabama, is 4-2 this season with an ERA of 3.26 and 11 appearances with 8 starts. He's worked nearly 50 innings while recording 60 strikeouts and holding opponents to only a .228 batting average. As you know, Henry was named the co-freshman of the week after feeding Florida way back on April 19th when he limited the Gators only 1 run on 4 hits and a career-high 12 strikeouts, but he hasn't pitched since then. The plague of arm soreness that has crippled LSU's pitching staff. The big player of the year awards, the big baseball awards, the individual awards. Player of the year went to J.J. Bleday of Vanderbilt. Ethan Small of Mississippi State was named pitcher of the year. If LSU wins tonight, expect them to see Small on Wednesday night. Freshman of the year went to J.T. Ginn of Mississippi State as well. Coach of the year, Tim Corbin of Vandy. And then the scholar athlete of the year is Garrett Stallings of Tennessee. So congratulations to the three Tigers that received all SEC baseball recognition. But they have something bigger on the line tonight. South Carolina is not good. We know this. They're the number 12 seed for a reason. They're 28-27 overall. They've struggled throughout the year. But LSU has been known to drop games that they shouldn't. So Paul Maneri and his staff will make sure that the Tigers are laser-focused for tonight's game. LSU does have a league-best 85-42 all-time record in the SEC tournament. And the Tigers do own a conference-high 12 tournament titles. The nearest to LSU is Alabama and Mississippi State, who have 7 each. And Ole Miss is third with 6. LSU has won 6 of the past 11 SEC tournament crowns, claiming the title in 08, 9, 10, 13, 14, and 17. And remember last year, they had that tremendous run where they lost in the SEC tournament championship game. And that was good enough to propel them into an NCAA regional, which they lost in Corvallis. The Tigers are also quite good in Hoover, under Paul Maneri. They're 35-8 in SEC tournament games. Like I said, last year LSU was 4-2 in the tournament and was defeated by Ole Miss in the championship game. How does LSU stack up with South Kakalaka? Well, they lead the overall series 38-29-1, which is a little bit closer than you may think, or remember, rather. They only first met on the diamond back in 1992. That's due to South Carolina joining the SEC in the early 90s. They essentially replaced Georgia Tech out of the SEC. South Carolina before then was part of the ACC. LSU has won 16 of its last 25 games with the Gamecocks. But last year, South Carolina swept the Tigers in a 3-game regular season series there in Columbia. before the Tigers posted a 6-4, 12-inning victory over South Carolina in the third round of the SEC tournament.
I remember that going down because it was one of those, wow, LSU made it to the third round of the SEC tournament last year. They were playing a team that swept them in the, during the regular season. There's no way LSU was going to lose four times to one team, and they did.
Yeah, that and it was close. It was, I mean, they needed 12 innings to beat South Carolina in the SEC
you
tournament.
You let my revisionist history live. You understand me? There was no way LSU was going to lose to a team four times.
And they did. They did. Yeah, you're right. You're right. LSU 7-2 all time against South Carolina in the SEC tournament. And the Tigers have won five of their last seven SEC regular season series versus the Gamecocks. So this could be an interesting matchup. This is what Paul Maneri had to say. Quote, the SEC tournament is a great event and something we always look forward to. There's a lot of excitement attached to the opening game since it's a single elimination and you have to win it if you want to stick around. Certainly, we will need to have success in the tournament in order to be considered as an NCAA regional host site. We have a lot of what-if. We have a lot impressive elements in our resume, including 19 wins against top 50 RPI teams. That's Paul. Just sneaking that in there. Just putting that out there. Oh, by the way, did you know that we have 19 wins against top 50 RPI teams?
Just trying to start a narrative. There we go. Just trying to, you know.
As he should. That's his job. The fifth highest total in the country. We're going to do our best to bring postseason baseball back home to our fans next week. They beat South Carolina. They host a regional. It's that simple. I don't even think they need to win two games. They beat South Carolina. They get to 18 wins in conference play overall. Then they go toe-to-toe with Mississippi State on Wednesday. If they lose, they get down into the loser's bracket. If they win, they keep moving right along. Probably playing Vandy on Thursday, maybe. So, when you're in. I think it's that simple for LSU. Now, if they can beat South Carolina and then beat Mississippi State and make a little bit of a run and get to the semifinals or possibly get to the SEC championship game, well then, not only will they be hosting a regional, but maybe they'll be hosting a higher regional. I mean, that's where it is for LSU right now. They win tonight, they lock up a regional. They keep it going. They keep the momentum going, make a run in the SEC tournament, get to the weekend, then they'll be hosting a higher regional. Everything's right in front of them. If I'm LSU, I want to try to win the SEC tournament.
Well, because obviously the benefits of a higher seed to host a regional would be theoretically an easier draw in the Supers.
Yeah. So let's say you're LSU and you barely get in. Let's say you just beat South Carolina and then you lose. You lose your next two games at the SEC tournament, okay? But you still sneak in as, what, the 18 or 20 regional seed, right, overall? How many regional hosts?
16, huh?
Is it 16?
Because there's eight, the top eight seeds host the Supers, so that means there would be 16 regionals, right?
So let's say you're 16. Your reward for winning your regional is going to be what? Facing Vandy?
Or what is it, UCLA?
Or UCLA? Two? No, we don't want that.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. If you put together a little bit of a run, you can move up maybe to 13, 14, 12. Make it easier on yourself. So everything is in front of them. But congratulations to the three LSU Tigers that got recognized yesterday. Cole Henry on the All-SEC freshman team, Zach Watson on the All-Defensive team, and Antoine Duplantis receiving second-team All-SEC honors, his first time receiving conference honors, the former Lafayette Mighty Lion. Once again, LSU will be playing South Carolina tonight in the opening round of the SEC tournament. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. First pregame show is tentatively scheduled for around 7:30, 7:45. The game will start around 8 o'clock at the earliest. More than likely, it'll go later because it's the final game. There's three other games that have to be played before it, so come on.
What Ray's saying is tomorrow morning should be interesting.
Yes, tomorrow morning will be interesting. But you can listen to that live tonight, 103.7 The Game. Got you covered for LSU SEC Tournament Baseball. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Raging Cajuns, they gear up for their opening game of the Sun Belt Tournament. We'll dive right into that right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. If you want to give us a call, pick up the phone. Dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO Equipment Hotline. The LSU baseball team, they're gearing up for South Carolina. Opening round of the SEC tournament. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Tonight, first pitch tentatively scheduled for 8 o'clock? I've covered enough tournament baseball. That LSU baseball game's not starting at 8 o'clock. That's going to be more of an 8:30.
Yeah, I'll probably get to watch the entirety of SmackDown before the LSU baseball game starts. SmackDown doesn't go off till 9.
Over under, how much of the LSU baseball game will either one of us get through?
It depends. It really depends. I'm the type of person, it's hard for me to go to sleep when the game's still going on. So if it's, you know, usually if I'm not asleep by like 10:30, I start to get mad. It's like, okay, this went wrong somewhere. I should be asleep by now.
You start getting
so
mad.
I'm assuming by 10:30 tonight, at best at 10:30 tonight, I'll be in like the seventh inning.
Okay.
And so it depends if the game is still in question, then I might have to stick it out and just be like, be getting 5 hour energy on the way to work tomorrow. Or, you know, if the game's not in question, then he might be asleep by 9. Who knows?
There we go. All right. I like your very optimistic this morning, Cody Schutz.
Yeah, probably not going to be asleep by 9.
But the LSU baseball team's not the only one opening up conference tournament play tonight. The UL Raging Cajuns are doing the same thing over in Conway, South Carolina, for the Sun Belt Conference tournament. And they got some good news yesterday as well. As just like LSU did, they had a trio of stars earn all conference honors. It's also UL has now had 3 all conference selections in every season since 2013. That's a nice little streak going on. Sophomore Hayden Cantrell, former Terling's Catholic star, senior Todd Lott, and senior Orn Vaon, formerly of STM, were selected as 3 of the Sun Belt's top performers after garnering all-conference honors on Monday. Cantrell, the Raging Cajun starting shortstop, Lott, their utility player, each landed on the league's first team, while Vaon in the outfield earned a spot on the second team. Louisiana has now placed at least 3 players every season since the 2013 campaign. And that's interesting because they've had a couple of down years, including this year and last year. But yet they still have enough talent where they're getting recognized by the conference. Cantrell started all 56 games this season at shortstop for the Raging Cajuns. He's been a constant at the top of the stats sheet for UL. He currently leads the team with 27 stolen bases and 52 runs scored. His 27 swipes currently ranks him tops in the Sun Belt Conference and 26 overall in the NCAA. On the year, he's also produced 18 multi-hit games, tied for the second most on the team, and also put together a 14-game hitting streak. Todd Lott, meanwhile, has been one of the hottest hitters for the Raging Cajuns all season. And look, this is a guy that did not live up to the expectations. And then this year, he has just been tearing it up. All that potential has been finally reached for Todd Lott now as a senior for the Raging Cajuns. He led the team with a .340 batting average and 44 runs batted in. He also came in conference play leading the team, came on especially in conference play, rather, as he led the team in hits, RBIs, home runs, while batting .385. So that was a great year for the Jacksonville, Florida native. Vaon, meanwhile, leads the team with 4 triples and places second on the team with 11 home runs. Entering the conference tournament, he was pacing the team with a .948 on base percentage and a .566 slugging percentage in league.
Wait, say that again?
He paces the team with a .948.
Yeah, that's right. It's like that's got to be his like OPS, that slugging percentage plus on base percentage.
Yes, I misspoke.
Yeah, because I was about to say your boy got out twice all season. He's got a .940 something on base percentage. Like Jesus.
Yes. OPS.
Okay. OPS.
Bad.
Okay. I still don't know what that is, but it's not on base percentage.
It's like a weird formula of on base.
It's
and
slugging combined somehow, but
and
it's the Mike Trout stat.
And combined with how much cotton candy is sold at the concession stand for that game, that's part of the formula as
that's
well.
Accurate.
It's very
it's
complex.
It's accurate, yeah. It's accurate.
It's very.
Thank Brad Pitt for that.
Sabermetrics. He hit .360 in Sunbelt play and led the team in slugging with .658, which is impressive. But UL is gearing up. They start conference tournament play tonight versus App State. First pitch is scheduled for 6:30 there in Conway, South Carolina. And look, this is an App State team. I know UL has this momentum. They've won their last three weekend series to get into the conference tournament. They got some momentum going. They're healthy, or healthy as they've been for a while. But App State, this is the same App State team that took 2 of 3 from UL back in March at the Teague. Won 2 of those games by the margin of 6-5. But UL did win the other one 7-4. So this is going to be a test. This is not going to be a walk in the park for Tony Robichaud's kids. So they're going to have their hands full. If they want to move on, they're going to have to take care of business, obviously, tonight versus App State, a team that beat them twice this season. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll be talking a little bit. LSU basketball landed themselves a stud. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
Lead for 18 more minutes than Golden State did.
I'll be attending Louisiana State University. I officially made my mind, you know, probably about a week ago. The biggest thing was the relationship and the trust, you know, the trust I had in those coaches and Coach Will and Coach Armstrong. I feel like it fit in great. You know, Naz Reid, he's not there anymore, and I feel like you're not going to replace him. And, you know, just pick up where they left off from last.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was Trendon Watford. You'll know him.
He used that name for about 365 days.
That's right. Get ready for that name. Diehard LSU basketball fans.
You're only going to need to know it for about a year, though.
That's all. He's a 5-star forward from Mountain Brook High School in Alabama. He officially committed to LSU on Monday afternoon in a ceremony held at his high school. He selected LSU over Alabama, who fell to the back of the pack after the university decided to fire Avery Johnson, who had been recruiting Watford for 3 years. That's what we call a smart decision. Yeah.
They didn't consult Nick Saban before that one.
They didn't consult their own brain. They just don't know how to run a basketball program. Watford picked LSU over Alabama, Indiana, and Memphis and called it by far the toughest decision of his life. He says that he trusts LSU, the trust I have with those coaches, and them helping me reach my potential. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, seeing how Naz Reid developed in the 1 year there at LSU, and now he's going to have himself as a first-round pick, probably did not hurt in that decision-making. He said he's also confident that LSU coach Will Wade will be at the school after being suspended and reinstated after published reports said he was called on a wiretap talking about paying a recruit as part of the ongoing federal corruption trial and scandal in college basketball. I'll get back more to Will Wade. I'll circle back to that point. Quote, when he got reinstated, he was still talking to me throughout the whole time and his athletic director was behind him.
I don't think that's true. That his athletic director was behind him? I don't think. We've
I think that's been shown not to be true. So, you know, I feel like he'll be there. Said he'll report to Baton Rouge in June. This is what this young man has done, besides just being a naturally gifted, freakish athlete. He already looks the part. He's one of those cats when you watch tape of him, when you watch videos of him, you're like, oh, yeah, is that guy already playing in college? No, he's still in high school. He led Mountain Brook High School to three straight Class 7A state championships in Alabama, averaged almost 24 points, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and 2.5 blocks per game during his senior season, which was capped with a 61-42 win over Baker in the title game. He finished his career with more than 3,500 points, ranking among the top 10 in Alabama High School Athletic Association history, and set a new state record with 1,900-plus rebounds. He also made sure to wear all three of his championship rings during the ceremony on Monday, which, that's a boss move. The third one, he said, quote, the third one just came in.
Could not wear it.
Had to show off the jewelry.
Well, the third one just came in. He hasn't got a chance to wear it yet. He wants to wear the third one because it just came in. But then you don't want to make the other two jealous by leaving them in the, you know, case while wearing the third one. So you got to put all three of them on. But okay. I want to know, did he wear, like, pointer finger, middle finger, ring finger? Or did he, like, stack them on his ring finger? You know, it's...
He got one. I'm looking at a picture. He got one on the pinky.
Oh, he went pinky.
He went pinky.
Pinky, ring finger, middle finger.
Yeah.
All right, my man. All right. Still needs that index finger. It's the most useful of all the fingers. So maybe the thumb. Thumbs. Is the thumb a finger? It's still raw. I have to cut it up. I have it, though. Dang it, I have it. Continue.
I don't know what to say today. I don't know what to say. So, Trendon Watford. What a great get for LSU. He's going to come in. He's going to be a plug-and-play starter from day one. You're going to have him. Now you're going to have Javonte Smart, who announced that he was coming back. We talked about that yesterday. Skylar Mays and the other guys will come back too. So this is a huge get for the LSU men's basketball team. And how much of a boss is Will Wade? That despite being suspended, despite being mentioned in federal corruption trials on wiretap conversations, in spite of all that, your boy still gets one of the top prospects in the country and the top prospect out of Alabama to come and commit and sign on the dotted line to become an LSU Tiger. Maybe he's just that good of a recruiter. I said with a straight face. Maybe. I don't know. I find it interesting. I have questions, though. The first question that pops up, and I don't know the rules. He said, this is the Watford quote that intrigues me. Quote, when he got reinstated, he was still talking to me throughout the whole time, and the athletic director was behind him. Does he mean that Wade was talking to him when he was... had been suspended the whole time? I have questions.
I don't know how the rules work on that.
If I was there for the ceremony, that'd be one of the first questions I'd ask. So when he was suspended, he was talking to you. Is that what you're saying? And if that's allowed, I don't know. Regardless,
there's no way he could be referring the AD behind him. There's no way he's referring to Scott Woodward and not Joe Oliva. He's got to be referring to Joe Oliva there, right?
I don't know.
Because that just seems like a... Maybe, you know what?
Athletic director allowed to...
I think we're reading too much into it, I think, because this is just something I think... This kid has gone through some sort of media training. Let's not act like he hasn't. You don't become one of the top recruits in the country without going through some kind of media training.
He's a five-star, so he's been trained.
So this, I think, is just a regurgitated answer that, you know, he just gives because that's the answer that he's kind of been trained to give. And he didn't think beyond the fact that, oh, wait, this regurgitated answer in this specific instance doesn't really make sense.
I got you. All right. I can go with that. Wofford, the two-time winner of Alabama's Mr. Basketball and a two-time winner of the Gatorade Player of the Year for Alabama, is 6'9", 230 pounds.
Nice.
He's the top recruit out of Alabama, the fourth best power forward recruit in the country, and he's ranked number 17 nationally overall. And he was one of just two players ranked that highly who had not yet committed to a college program, according to our friend Amy Just of NOLA.com. He's good, is what we're trying to tell you here. And Cody's exactly right when he says, enjoy him for 365 days. Less than that. Because as soon as their season's over, it'll be declared time.
Bye.
So thank you. So, appreciate him for about 335 days.
I mean, and that's fine. That's the nature of college basketball now. At least LSU is in that game.
Wofford's commitment to LSU marks the second time in the past 2 years that the Tigers have hauled in a top 20 player in the country. Naz Reid was the number 18 player in the country in the 2018 class. He ended up being on the SEC's all-freshman team and has since declared for the NBA draft with no intentions of returning to Baton Rouge. Wofford is also the third five-star to commit to LSU in the past 2 years, as Emmett Williams joined Reed in last year's class as the two top recruits. Before Wofford, Reed, and Williams, the last five-star player to pledge to LSU was your favorite player.
My favorite player?
It's your favorite player.
Big Baby?
He repped LSU so hard, led them to unprecedented heights.
Duh.
Ben Simmons.
Ozzie, Ozzie, Ozzie. Oi, oi, oi.
Nice.
How's that process working out for you?
Oh. Take that, Philadelphia 76ers.
Right.
Take that from Cody Schutz.
Shots fired. I matter.
You do. You matter to me, buddy. Keep up the great work.
Would you stay in that next room during this commercial break coming up here? Would you?
Raymond, you've been quarantined. LSU has two other members in the 2019 signing class, a three-star junior college shooting guard, Charles Manning, and a three-star combo guard, James Bishop. Both Manning and Bishop signed their national letter of intents during the early signing period back in last November. So LSU should have three more scholarships to give, though. Counting Manning, Bishop, and Wofford, LSU has 10 players on scholarship. The NCAA allows a maximum of 13 for Division I programs. The other seven, Javonte Smart, who's already said that he's come back to the program. We're still waiting on Skylar Mays. Marlon Taylor, Cortez Cooper, Andre Hyatt, Darius Days, and Emmett Williams. So, you add the two JUCO kids. Wofford will be a starter. Smart and Mays. You have Smart, Mays, Taylor back. We know how good those guys are. Wofford comes in. We know that Darius Days and Emmett Williams can give you some, and they still got three other guys to sign.
Woo!
Are they going to add maybe a JUCO? Maybe sign another high school guy? I don't know. As I said before, Smart is already declared. Smart, who also declared for the draft, did announce on Saturday that he's returning to LSU for a sophomore season. Mays, Taylor, and Williams have declared as well. But they did not get invited to the G League Combine or the NBA Combine, so more than likely they'll be coming back to LSU. Also, for those three scholarships, one could be given to fan favorite and a guy that the team loves. That's Marshall Graves, who's not on scholarship. So they could give him one, say, hey, man, you've been working hard. Here's an extra scholarship. But still, expect we'll wait to do a couple other things here. They still got some other guys they can sign, but what a get to poach them out of the state of Alabama, to pull them away from Penny Hardaway in Memphis. That's an emerging team, especially on the recruiting trail. great get. With everything that's going on for the LSU men's basketball program, all the tarnish, all the national scrutiny, everything, the suspension, the resignation of Joe Oliva, the whole nine yards, everything that's went into that, to still be able to nab a five-star plug-and-play forward who's probably going to go and be a one-and-doneer and get to the NBA in a year, tremendous. Regardless of how you feel about Will Wade in that situation, that's still a tremendous accomplishment. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, the Tampa Bay Bucks released one of the best damn defensive linemen in the NFL, a multiple All-Pro and Pro Bowler, just because they want to save money. Should the New Orleans Saints go get the big fella, Gerald McCoy? Could he be the missing piece to push them over the top? We'll discuss when we get back here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are just keep doing Tampa Bay Buccaneer things. And it could be to the benefit of the New Orleans Saints. The Bucs decided yesterday to release defensive tackle Gerald McCoy after nine seasons with the ball club. The 31-year-old had 3 years remaining on his contract with the Bucs, was owed $13 million prior to his release. Now that he's off the roster, McCoy will count nothing against Tampa Bay's cap. Jason Licht said in a Steam statement, "These decisions are very difficult. No one cares. No, this is a dummy decision. If you don't want to have to pay him all that money, then you somehow find a way to renegotiate. He's your team leader. He's your most senior member of the team's defense. He's a top three and has been for his entire career interior defensive lineman in the league. And you're going to tell me that's very difficult personally. Blah, 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 blah. No one cares. You're a moron. Moving on." The defensive tackle seemed to know that the end was there, though. When asked last week whether he'd suit up for the Bucs, he said, we'll be playing football somewhere. The defensive tackle has amassed at least five sacks in each of the last seven seasons. He's a defensive tackle. Once again, has amassed five sacks in each of at least five sacks in each of the last seven seasons. That's the longest active streak amongst defensive tackles. Since 2010, McCoy has 50.5 sacks, the third most among all defensive tackles in the league. His six Pro Bowl selections since 2012 are tied with Cincinnati's Geno Atkins for the most among defensive linemen. Just not tackles, but defensive linemen. He's also a multiple All-Pro. Apparently, the Bucs are targeting Ndamukong Suh to replace him. This is a man who made $14 million last season on a one-year deal with the Los Angeles Rams. So, okay. Obviously, McCoy will have many suitors. He's already been mentioned as a possible target of the Cleveland Browns in trade talks that never went anywhere. If I'm the New Orleans Saints, I'm getting Gail Benson. Borrowing her plane, I'm assuming the Queen has her own jet. Okay? Or owns a jet service, something. I'm going to go wherever Gerald McCoy is living. If he's living in Tampa or if he's living back in Oklahoma where he went to college at, I don't care. I'm going to find Gerald McCoy. I'm going to say, here's a contract. Sign it. And I'm bringing him immediately to New Orleans. This is a multiple All-Pro, multiple Pro Bowler, pass-rushing defensive tackle. We've talked about that the Saints need the line help. Rankins, who they re-upped, is coming off injury. They bring in the cat from from New England. Neither one of those guys are on Gerald McCoy's level. Not even close. And the Saints tried to make a run at Sue last year. He opted to go to the Los Angeles Rams instead. Mickey Loomis is a magician when it comes to finding money. He's the David Blaine of finding free agent money without being a bag.
He's the Collins Key for the younger generation.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. You're good form today, buddy. I like what you're bringing to the table today. Good job. Good job.
You're welcome.
You're wearing your Houdat hat.
I am. I am indeed.
Do you want them to go sign Gerald McCoy?
Yeah, totally.
Yes.
I want him to pull one of those. Here's a blank check. Write any amount of money on it that you want, and I will pay it.
You could just give them the one-year deal. Look, they can find a way. They can find a way to figure out money to get Gerald. Can you imagine having Gerald McCoy there in a rotation of Brown and Rankings at the D-tackle spots with Cam and Davenport on the edge? Can you imagine that?
I want McCoy on the team most of all because he's the best and prime candidate to find out what pisses Mike Evans off the most. So all the Saints players can just do that.
And how great would it be to see Gerald McCoy just throw Jameis Winston into the ground?
I mean, we're talking like Goldberg jackhammer. Like spear, jackhammer, 1, 2, 3.
So Tampa Bay cuts him. Our Twitter poll question for you, the listener. Go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account. Vote on our latest poll. Do you want the Saints to sign Gerald McCoy? Yes or no? Pretty simple. Pretty straightforward. You already know me and Cody's answer. It's yes.
See.
Get it done today. I want this done by 1:30. Done. First hour is done in the books. We got NBA playoffs. The Dubs, they got the sweep of the Blazers. They're moving on to their fifth NBA Finals.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Trying to relocate, gets free, doubled immediately on the catch, over to Draymond for three, it's up and good! Draymond Green!
It's not a two this time, it's a legitimate three.
119-150, Golden State and Portland wants time! Big time bucket!
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. It's time to kick off the second hour of this Tuesday edition of the show. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline 337-706-0111. First hour. We previewed LSU baseball at South Carolina. I'm sorry, not at South Carolina. LSU baseball versus South Carolina at the SEC tournament.
The Cajuns are in South Carolina, though.
There we go. We also previewed the UL baseball team versus Appalachian State in Conway, South Carolina for the Sun Belt Conference tournament. We also talked about the huge five-star commitment that the LSU men's basketball team received for the best player out of the state of Alabama and a top 20 prospect nationally. And then we also talked about Gerald McCoy, longtime defensive leader of the Tampa Bay Bucks, multiple All-Pro, multiple Pro Bowler being released, and if the Saints should pick him up. That's our Twitter poll question. Make sure to go vote. Should the Saints sign Gerald McCoy, the former Tampa Bay Buck defensive tackle? But we're also going to talk a little NBA playoffs right now, though. Despite not having Kevin Durant, two-time finals MVP, former league MVP. Considered to be the best player on the face of the planet with a round ball in his hands. Despite not having Boogie Cousins sidelined for the postseason. And then also losing Andre Iguodala during this series in the Western Conference Finals versus the Portland Trailblazers. It didn't matter. It didn't matter for the Dubs. Golden State Warriors beat the Portland Trailblazers last night 119-117 in overtime. They swept the Trailblazers without Kevin Durant, Boogie Cousins, and then missing Iggy. Good luck, Milwaukee / Toronto, whoever comes out of the East. Now, Golden State will have a 10-day wait. Regardless of what happens in the Eastern Conference Finals, Golden State will not play another game. They have to wait 10 days because the start of the NBA Finals will not begin until May 30th. So they got time to heal. They also got time to get rusty. Steve Kerr will make sure both things will be managed properly. Once again, the Portland Trailblazers had Golden State down in this game last night. They overcame a double-digit deficit for the third straight game against the Blazers. The Blazers have had a good game plan. They had a good game plan versus the Golden State Warriors. It worked. It even worked in the second half of these games, particularly in the third quarters. Did not matter. Despite not having Kevin Durant, despite not having Iguodala, despite not having Boogie Cousins, despite having guys coming off the bench that you don't even know who they are, hell, I would assume maybe even Steve Kerr doesn't know who some of the guys at the end of his bench are. Didn't matter. They rally from double-digit deficits on the road, pulling out wins, sweeping the Portland Trailblazers. Draymond Green has been a monster this postseason. 18 points, 14 rebounds, and 11 assists last night. He also made a key three-pointer in overtime. Steph Curry, who earlier in the postseason people were worried about his foul trouble and that he looked a little hobbled, he didn't look like himself. He had 37 points, 12 rebounds, and 11 assists. They became the first teammates in NBA history to have triple-doubles in the same playoff game. And this is the Golden State Warriors team that was supposed to be vulnerable. Remember? They're vulnerable? Not so much. Once again, they all have a 10-day off period. And look, and they've done this. Portland gave them everything they could handle. They punched, okay? They went right after Golden State. But the Warriors came back from 17 down in Game 4 after erasing an 18-point deficit in Game 3 and then a 17-point deficit in Game 2. Didn't matter. Curry, quote, "We've been here before. We've seen everything, every experience you can imagine, so we relied on that." The Warriors become the first team in NBA history to reach five straight NBA finals since the Boston Celtics went to 10 in a row from 1957 to 1966. I'll say it again for those in the back.
Were they shooting the ball through a milk crate back then? I mean, goodness.
I do have a stat about that. That's going to make it even. Once again, the first team to reach five straight NBA finals since the Boston Celtics did it from 1957 to 1966. So that's a long time ago, is what I'm trying to tell you. Okay? That's a long time ago. I want to say even back then, when the Celtics did it, I think a couple years, they had a bye into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, the Saints, the beloved New Orleans Saints, we all know I'm wearing the hat, yet they were founded in 1967.
Nice. Yeah, back in those days, you didn't have to play as many games. And Boston, I want to say a couple of those years during that run, there was only maybe like 12 teams in the league, and you get a bye into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right. And the Flint, Michigan Tropics, they don't count.
Will Ferrell reference all of it.
Traded him for a washing machine.
Dame Leonard had 28 points and 12 assists for Portland as he played with separated ribs.
Ow.
Yeah. Great effort by Portland. They had him on the ropes three straight games, up on them by double digits. But this just goes to show you just how dominant they are. The Warriors are also now just the sixth professional team from North America to go to five straight championships, along with the Montreal Canadiens of the NHL, the Boston Celtics, as we mentioned, the Cleveland Browns. This is like back in the day, like Jim Brown era, Cleveland Browns, obviously. New York Yankees and the New York Islanders. Just, regardless of who comes out of the East, regardless of if it's Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, who will try to even the series tonight in the Eastern Conference Finals, or if it's the Greek Freak, the guy who's more than likely going to be named league MVP. Phenomenal talent. Phenomenal player. And Milwaukee's got some great depth. Is it going to matter? Is it going to matter? Is anyone going to beat the Golden State Warriors? I mean, the way Steph Curry's playing, even if they don't give Kevin Durant back, let's say they get Kevin Durant back and he's only 60%. They get Iggy back, he's only 60%. Is it going to matter? Is it truly going to matter in the NBA Finals? There's no LeBron James that's going to will someone to beat them, or at least stand in their way. There's no one. They just had a two-time Finals MVP on the shelf for an entire playoff series. They had another, their great sixth man and a former All-Star get injured during the series. They were down by 17 points twice and 18 points another time in three games, including on the road. And they still swept the opposition. They still swept the opposition. Steve Kerr does a masterful job. He truly does. A masterful job. He somehow finds a way of dealing with all the egos. And that team's got egos. Make no doubt about it. He somehow finds a way to do all that and still get away to get to five straight NBA Finals.
I think it's got a little something to do, Steve Kerr, I mean, with the guys he played with when he was in the NBA. I think he was surrounded himself by a couple of large egos when he was in uniform.
That's correct. He played with Jordan, Pippen.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, and so he knows what it takes. He knows how a certain player's ego, you need to kind of stroke it a little bit from time to time, or how to be combative with guys.
Did he not also play for Phil Jackson?
Yes.
Yeah. That
he played with Jordan. He played for Phil Jackson.
That'll help you too.
That'll help you a lot. That'll help. He's getting pretty close of catching Phil on the rings ladder too. It's getting closer.
And you guarantee you take it to the bank, that pisses Phil Jackson off.
Oh, I mean, part of him's like, oh, this is great. This is one of my guys.
Nope.
This is, nope, not Phil Jackson.
Nuh-uh.
Not Phil Jackson. Oh, man. Hey, remember when Steve Kerr had, like, the severe back pain and Luke Walton was the interim coach and everyone was like, anyone can do it. Look how good Luke Walton is as a coach. Where's Luke Walton now? Oh, that's right. He left, got fired from the Lakers, is now coaching the Kings. Let me know how that's working out for you.
I mean, he didn't leave the state.
repping Sacktown.
There's that.
Warriors move on. Fifth straight final appearance. They await the winner of the Eastern Conference, whether that's the Bucks or the Raptors. We'll see. I don't believe it's going to matter, but that's just my hot take on that. When we come back, we'll talk a little Houston Astros baseball. They began another series last night, did so with a victory. We'll dive in right here on 103.7 The Game.
That ball's ripped. There's your first home run. Tyler White, get up and out of here. It does. A blast to left center field over the train tracks. Astros lead 3-0 on Tyler White's first home run of the season.
Astros get it done. 3-0 win over the Chicago White Sox. Astros improved to 32-16 overall with last night's victory.
Bad guys win. Bad guys win.
Bad guys.
Because they played the White Sox. That guy retired, though, I think. The put it on the board. Yeah.
I think so, yes.
I think he retired. Hate that guy. But he's an icon. But hate that guy.
Hey, man. We're all about the positive train this morning, Cody Schutz. You've been serving as the conductor for the positive train in the studio today. Let's not go backwards.
I always have love for the South, except for the South side of Chicago.
Trust me, there's people in Chicago that don't have love for the South side of Chicago.
You're right. You're not wrong.
Yeah, we don't have time to get into that conversation. Astros take care of business last night. Defeat the Chicago White Sox 3-0. They improved to 32-16 overall. You're listening to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Now, the Stros, this begins a longstanding homestand for them. And what better way to start a homestand than to, you know, post a shutout. Brad Peacock was on the bump. He got himself his victory. And he's really developing into a heck of an asset for them. Look, they're set. They got Verlander as the number one. They got Garrett Cole as the number two. But that 3-4-5 spot, I think it's a bit of a jumble. And even though they have the best record in all of baseball, I still think they're trying to figure things out. Is it going to be Peacock? Is it going to be Louisiana native Wade Miley? Who knows? So last night at Minute Maid Park, they took care of business. Jake Mariznick and Tyler White both unloaded 400-foot-plus home runs from the bottom third of the batting order. When you're getting guys at that part of the batting order that are knocking in home runs, you're a really, really good ball club. I mean, everyone can always depend on those guys in the heart of the order or at the top of the order. But when you're getting the bottom of the order and they're knocking in home runs, true, the White Sox are terrible. But you love to see the run production like that. Peacock, he struck out 9 last night with only 2 hits through 5 innings. And then A.J. Hinch put in relievers to get some work. 4 of them provided 4 scoreless innings as well as the Astros begin their 10-game homestand with a dub. Peacock is now 5-2 overall on the season. He's made his third start since going to the windup after some up-and-down moments through March and April. He did not issue a walk after walking 4 and 5 innings in his last start at Detroit. Now, the Astros were able to put up runs despite being shorthanded. Okay, George Springer, leadoff hitter, the man behind the Springer dinger, he was out with lower back stiffness. Diaz has a strained left hammy, but yet they still had enough power to find a way to beat the White Sox. And that's really kind of the trick for the baseball season is a lot of times teams will rise up and take down the good competition like the Astros have done this year, beating up on the Boston Red Sox, beating up on the New York Yankees. The trick is not to lose to the inferior competition because sometimes when you're a top shelf athlete, you'll do that. It's just natural. It's not. Sometimes you don't even do it consciously. It's more of a subconscious, like, oh, you're like, oh, you come into town or you come back home, whether it's a homestand or you're on a road trip, and you're like, wow, this team is awful. You try to have the mindset that you're going to gear up for everyone, but we see it at every level of sports that there are times where you're going to maybe underestimate an opponent. And the Astros have done a good job this year after some early setbacks those first couple of weeks of not playing down to the competition. And even if you have some of your best players out and you can still find a way to get a win over inferior competition, boy, that's a great sign. That's a great sign of what the makeup of this team is. The Astros will be back on tonight. You can listen to Game 2 of this series live on our sister station, KVOL. That's the Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Also 104.1 in Lake Charles. So the Astros will get back to business like that. I just, you know, when you get Mariznick and Tyler White, those guys to homer, Peacock is pitching well. You know, we've talked about it on this show before. Will the Astros be aggressive? Will they make some sort of move before the trade deadline? They had the best record in baseball. They have an ace, a guy that looks like he's pitching at a level of winning a Cy Young Award. They have a tremendous lineup. The addition of Brantley has been huge for them. And they've had a little bit of injury issues, Altuve being banged up. He's also been struggling. Think about it this way. The Houston Astros are the best team in baseball. And that's with Jose Altuve having the worst season of his career and being injured. And yet they're still the best team in baseball. That is phenomenal to me.
We're keeping track of when exactly the Astros will have this division locked up by the end of May.
Our good friend Patrick McClellan says by the end of the month.
It's creeping up on us. Would you like to take a shot at how many games in first place the Astros are? I'll even tell you the Rangers are the second place team.
Oh, really? 12?
Nah, a little too high. A little too high. 8.5. That's still really, it's a big lead.
It's 8.5?
It's the biggest lead in all divisions in all of baseball by about 2.5 games. So there's that. Shout out to the Astros. A nice 8.5 game lead. They have 32 wins overall on the season. That right there. Oh, hey, you want to know who's in last place in the AL West?
Of course.
The Seattle Mariners.
Oh, the champions. The champions.
They're 10 games back. So it looks like the AL West is on top of the Astros being the best team in baseball. Looks like everyone else is going to be pretty mediocre.
Hey, and that's good. They can keep racking up wins and building up momentum. Hey, you want to go after that Seattle Mariners record of most wins in the regular season? Get after it.
And just for sake's sake, Cubs still in first place in the NL Central. Take that, Cardinals and Brewers.
Cubs come to town playing the Astros next week, Cody Schuetz.
It's the middle of the week. We discussed this already, though. It's not a weekend series. This was when rap game was still a thing. We discussed trying to make that trip, and we realized it's like a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series or something.
Just a reminder, for the second straight year, Bumper to Bumper Sports with our good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from the Juice Box. That's right, Minute Maid Park, this Friday. Tune in on the 24th. Starting at 4 p.m., as Ben will be live from the home of the Houston Astros right here on 103.7 The Game. This special broadcast is brought to you by Artco Equipment. So, remind yourself, mark it in your calendar, put it in your phone, do a text notification, whatever you got to do. Check out Bumper to Bumper Sports this Friday live from Minute Maid Park, home of the Houston Astros. It's a special broadcast brought to you by Artco Equipment. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to talk to our friend David Berry of the Lake Charles American Press. Southland Conference Baseball Tournament kicks off today. We'll talk to him about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We started off today's show talking a lot about LSU baseball gearing up for the SEC tournament. in Hoover, Alabama. They take on South Carolina tonight. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. First pitch tentatively scheduled for 8 p.m. We also talked about the Raging Cajuns baseball team. They're playing in the opening round of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in Conway, South Carolina tonight as they take on App State, tentatively scheduled for 6:30 p.m. But it's not the only conference baseball going on. The Southland Conference kicks up in Sugar Land, Texas, starting tomorrow at Constellation Field in Sugar Land for their championship tournament. Winner earns a spot in an NCAA regional. And to help us break that down and give us some insight on the teams that could be making noise in the Southland Conference is our good friend from the Lake Charles American Press. He covers McNeese State Athletics, it's the one and only David Berry. David, how are you this morning, brother?
Man, I'm doing well. Cannot complain at all. How you doing?
Doing well. It's a great time of year. So much going on across the board. Let's start off with the team that you cover. They head into the Southland Conference Tournament starting tomorrow there in Sugar Land, Texas, as the 5 seed, and they'll be taking on number 4, Incarnate Word. Tell us a little bit about McNeese State, how they finished the season, and then give us some insight about the matchup with Incarnate Word in the opening round of the conference tournament, David.
Sure thing. Well, McNeese, if you saw where they were, probably about midway through Southland Conference play, if I would have told you that they'd be the 5th seed, you'd probably look at me like I was an alien or something. They had 7 conference wins, and they were, I think, in either 9th or 10th place in the conference. And I remember, it's funny, we had our weekly press conference with head coach Justin Hill at that time. And I remember you said, we need to finish with 15 conference wins. He's like, I feel confident that if we get 15 conference wins, that we should be able to get into the tournament. That would require them going 8-4 over the last 12 conference games. Basically, you have to win every series. Take 2 out of 3. Well, sure enough, they finished 9-3. I mean, they started playing great baseball. The thing about them, early in the year, the offense was clicking and the pitching was struggling. Then there was a point kind of midway through the year where the pitching picked up and the offense was struggling. Now, everything's going good at the same time, which is, you know, perfect time for that to happen. You're going into a tournament, which same Houston State, they're the top seed, but McNeese went up to Huntsville and won. They lost the series. They only took 1 game. But it was one of those series that if you saw, they could have easily won the series, taking 2 out of 3. So, yeah, right now McNeese is playing probably some of his best baseball. They're pitching really good. You know, they've made a couple adjustments to the pitching rotation. Some guys that were in the bullpen are starting, and now some guys that are starting and are in the bullpen, and that move to this point has worked out. Now they're going up against an Incarnate Word team that swept them at home early in conference play. This was McNeese's second conference series, and you know, I talked to a few players yesterday, and they were pretty adamant. They're chomping at the bit to get back at UIW. UIW is a very they felt that they didn't give UIW their best, so they're really chomping at the bit. They really want to get that first win out of the way so they can get into the winner's bracket and kind of, you know, you always want to win, but you go into the loser's bracket and you're kind of fighting your way the entire tournament. So, so UIW, they're going to be tough. The entire side of this bracket, all 4 teams are the 4 of the best hitting teams in the conference. So could be a lot of high scoring, but McNeese, they feel confident with their pitching. So it's definitely going to be up in the air as far as this year's Southland Conference tournament.
We're talking with David Berry, the Lake Charles American Press, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David covers McNeese State Athletics, and he's going to be in Sugar Land for the Southland Conference Baseball Tournament. Now, of all the teams, the five teams out of the state of Louisiana. Only three of them made the conference tournament. McNeese is the five seed. They'll be playing tomorrow at tentatively scheduled 7 o'clock when they face number four seed Incarnate Word. The other two teams from the state that got in were Northwestern State as the seven seed, David. They take on the number two seed overall, Central Arkansas. That's going to be a tall task for the Demons to take down Central Arkansas. What can you tell us about UCA?
It's going to be tough. The thing about UCA, they're okay at hitting, but the thing that gives, like I said, this conference tournament, it's so up in the air. There was a point, I forget to look at the standings, but there's a point where first place through 10th place, like late in the season, was separated by like four or five games. So, you know, obviously you look at, you hear seed and you hear, you know, number two seed, number seven seed, and you tend to think like, man, that should be a pretty easy one. Honestly, there's no game in the tournament that I'd say, you know, in the first round tomorrow, there's no game tomorrow that if a lower seed happened to win that I would look at and I'd be like really shocked. Obviously right now, obviously Sam Houston, they're the favorite. But, yeah, no, as far as UCA and Northwestern goes, like, Northwestern, they can hit it. You know, like, don't sleep on them just because they have that lower seed. It's going to be a tough one. But, no, I think I would imagine UCA should have enough to get the win. But, honestly, it would not surprise me if Northwestern State was able to pull off a quote-unquote upset.
Central Arkansas takes on Northwestern State on Wednesday. That's the opening game of the that's the second game of the tournament. That'll be scheduled at noon. The opening game of the tournament on that side of the bracket as well, which is opposite of McNeese State, is number three Southeastern Louisiana, the Lions of Hammond, taking on the Lumberjacks of Stephen F. Austin, the sixth seed. You already mentioned, David, that this is kind of just a crapshoot, right, with the separation of the teams. So are there any favorites? Is Southeastern a team that could make a little bit of a run here in this conference tournament, or could they just as easily just lose in the first round to Stephen F. Austin?
Well, while I think that I do think it's a very evenly matched eight teams, I do, from the teams that I saw, Sam Houston is very good, and I do think Southeastern is one of the top teams. Like, I think the top two teams are correct as far as seeding. But, you know, I saw them play. McNeese played Southeastern. The situation was a little different because they played two non-conference games against Southeastern. Obviously, they're in the same conference, but every year there are two opponents that a Southland Conference opponent, a Southland Conference team doesn't play just because of the odd number of teams in conference. So, but no, they played Southeastern. They were close games, but no, Southeastern is very good. Like, Southeastern, I would put as one of the favorites to win. They're really good. Their pitching is really good. They get some timely hitting. So, yeah, I know, like, they definitely could be one of those teams. Like I said, if they can get that first win, you know, like, basically, it's easier than it sounds, but you get those first two wins, and you can cruise. You don't have to play Friday, and you're going all the way already into the championship round. But, no, I do think Southeastern is one of those teams. SFA, they're inconsistent at best. They had a chance to be the five seed. They struggled a little bit in their last few weeks, and they played McNeese and struggled against McNeese. So, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, upsets can happen, but that's one of those that I actually do see Southeastern being able to jump out and get that first conference tournament win tomorrow.
We're talking with David Berry of the Lake Charles American Press here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, Sam Houston State is the number one overall seed. Is it their tournament to lose, or are they that good? Are they that much better, rather, than everyone else, that it's their tournament to lose? Or is the gap far closer than maybe people think that don't really pay attention to Southland Conference baseball?
So I think the answer is kind of yes to both. Like, I do think that they are the best team in the tournament, and they, you know, they didn't win the regular season championship for no reason. So I do think the conference tournament is theirs to lose, but also they're not heads and shoulders above the other teams in the conference. Like I said, and I can only go off of when they played McNeese, and they played McNeese way before they kind of got going. And like I said, that was one of those where they could, McNeese could have easily taken two out of three. So, and the way baseball, the way conference tournament play goes is, you know, if you catch some hot pitching, it's going to be, you know, it'll be tough. Now, Sam Houston State is loaded. You know, they've got really, they can hit, they can pitch. They've got everything you want. And if they win the tournament, I definitely wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, they are the best team and they won the conference for a reason. But it's not like they had the conference wrapped up, you know, two, 3 weeks ago. Like they had to win. Like they clinched a tournament berth a few weeks ago, but they had to go into this weekend and win and have, I think, Southeastern lose or something along those lines to clinch the top seed. So I do think they're the best team in the tournament, and at the same time, they're still going to need to work. Like, it's not going to – nobody in this tournament is going to give it to them, because there's enough talent for these other teams that will definitely challenge them.
David, we'll wrap it up with this. We're talking with David Berry, the Lake Charles American Press, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. David, is this a one-bid league this year? Whoever wins the tournament gets in, or is Sam Houston good enough to still sneak in and go to a regional somewhere if they don't win the conference tournament?
I'm going to say a one bid. I'd be very – now, as some people on Twitter may remind you, some of my predictions when it comes to postseason play, more specifically Southland Conference football, aren't always accurate. But I'm looking, and like that's kind of where the parity in the conference comes back to hurt, because there was no team that specifically stood out in non-conference play. And by the time you get to conference play, every team, like I said, was fighting and scratching with each other. And by the end, Sam Houston kind of rose to the top. If it were to happen, it would have to be like maybe Southeastern getting the berth, and then possibly Sam getting an at-large. But other than that, I can't see it. I'd be, you know, whoever wins this one is going to be representing the Southland Conference come next week.
David, appreciate your time as always. Enjoy covering the tournament there in Sugar Land, Texas, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks as always for having me on, and yeah, I hope we can talk soon again.
It's David Berry, Lake Charles American Press, joining us, giving us a little preview of the Southland Conference baseball tournament, which begins tomorrow. Features three teams from the state of Louisiana: McNeese State, Southeastern, as well as Northwestern State. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game. The hot summer sun is in high gear, and it's time to cool off. And what better way to do that than a trip to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge? 103.7 The Game wants to send you there with a free family four-pack of tickets. Just text H2O to 68683. That's H2O to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to Blue Bayou Dixie Landing in Baton Rouge. So what are you waiting for? Text H2O to 68683. And you could be cooling down soon. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1, as well as 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Talked a lot of baseball today. LSU gearing up for the SEC tournament. They're in the single elimination portion. They're the 5 seed. They're taking on the 12 seed tonight, South Carolina versus LSU there in Hoover. Cole Henry is going to get the start on the bump. He's been sidelined for a better part of more than a month now. Don't expect him to go very long. This is not going to be a five-inning performance by any stretch of the imagination. It's more than likely going to let him get some reps out there against a bad team. Hopefully he can have good stuff. Probably maybe three innings, I'd say. Three innings is roughly what I would say that Cole Henry is going to pitch tonight, maybe a little bit more. And then you'll have some of the other bullpen guys come in and eat up innings. Hopefully it will not be a close affair by any stretch of the imagination. We talked about that leading off today's show. We also talked about the Raging Cajun baseball team there in Conway, South Carolina. They have to play App State tonight, 6:30 tentative start for Tony Robichaud's club as they try to make a run in the conference tournament to try to get into an NCAA regional. There are a few games under 500. RPI is not strong, so they'll need to win their conference tournament to get into NCAA postseason play, unlike LSU, which needs a win tonight to lock up a regional. And if they make a run in the tournament, they could get a higher regional. So LSU is going to be in regardless of what happens. Whether or not they host a regional in Baton Rouge will determine on what occurs this week in Hoover. Also talked about the Tampa Bay Bucks deciding to part ways with multiple Pro Bowler and multiple All-Pro defensive tackle, one of the best pass-rushing D-tackles in the league. We talked about, should the Saints sign him? Me and Cody said yes. Cody, let's give the folks an update on that Twitter poll question. You can go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account, vote on our poll, should the Saints sign Gerald McCoy?
72% say yes, Raymond. About 25 votes in on that poll question so far. 72% say yes, bring in McCoy.
I want to hear from the people that say they don't want to sign one of the best pass-rushing D-tackles in the league.
Well, those are probably not Saints fans. Those are the Cowboys fans that live around here.
Oh, good point, good point, good point.
I assume.
Good point, good point. And if you want to express yourself and tell us why you want to see Gerald McCoy signed or not, give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. 337-706-0111.
Express yourself.
My man has been on point today. Cody Schutz is having a good morning already. Good morning.
You keep leading me into songs. Having a good time.
It's Karaoke Tuesdays here on RP3 and Company, ladies and gentlemen. We also talked about Golden State Warriors. Despite not having Kevin Durant for this entire series, despite Iggy getting hurt as well and no DeMarcus Cousins, and being down by 17 points in one game, 18 points in another, and 17 points in another, they still found a way to sweep the Portland Trail Blazers. They're in the finals for the fifth straight year. The last team to do that was the great Boston Celtics teams of the 60s that went to 10 straight. But back then, no offense to the old schoolers, there wasn't as many teams in the league. There wasn't as many rounds in the playoffs. And Boston actually got some byes into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Pretty sure they were still shooting balls through peach baskets or something. I'm telling you. There was no hoop and net.
There was no hoop and net in the 60s.
I'm almost certain.
That. I love that. It was a milk crate and a peach basket on one end. The stands were made of dirt.
Layups were top 10 plays.
They played outside.
I like outdoor sports.
I do too. Second hour is in the books. Coming up, Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate is going to join us. He's going to give us his insight on the LSU men's basketball team getting a five-star recruit again, as well as his thoughts on the LSU baseball team. He's going to be talking to us from Hoover. That's right, our friend Scott Rabelais. He'll help us lead off the third hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. We can also be caught on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off today's show talking about the LSU baseball team. They picked up a couple of postseason awards, including Antoine Duplantis, finally earning all-SEC recognition, the former Lafayette High Lion star. They also are gearing up for the single elimination portion of the SEC tournament tonight versus South Carolina. It's the last of the four games planned there in Hoover. They'll take on South Carolina. It's the 5-12 matchup. Tentatively set for 8 p.m., but it's probably going to be later. But you can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, the pregame show, as well as live game coverage. We're going to get more about the LSU baseball team now as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is one of the revered columnists for the Baton Rouge Advocate. He covers LSU sports better than anyone out there. It's our good friend Scott Rabelais. Scott, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm blushing is how I am. Thank you for the kind introduction.
Scott, it was my pleasure, brother. Well deserved. Let's talk. Before we get into the baseball talk, I want to get your thoughts on basketball, because yesterday LSU, Will Wade, got themselves one hell of a player as Trendon Watford out of Alabama, the Mr. Basketball for the state of Alabama, Gatorade Player of the Year, a top 20 ranked recruit in the nation, picks LSU over Alabama and Memphis and Indiana. Your thoughts on, despite everything that occurred at the end of the season and this offseason with the LSU men's basketball program, they were still able to lock up a guy as talented as Watford?
Yeah, it's remarkable. Consider all that has happened with LSU, all the, what you know has to be negative recruiting going on by other schools against LSU, to get a player like Watford, who's, you know, pretty much in the caliber of a Naz Reid from last year, is pretty impressive. And look, if Will Wade is the coach and going forward, and of course there's still always a possibility something else could come out. I think you know about Wade that's incriminating. I think the possibility of that grows smaller each day, but you know, there's still a possibility. But I think, you know, they've already had Javonte Smart say he's coming back, and these other players who declared for the draft, and I'm thinking of wanted to check out their draft prospects like Marlon Taylor and Emmett Williams and Skylar Mays. If they come back, they still have a pretty darn good team this year. Maybe not the team that, you know, is going to could repeat as SEC champions, but certainly a team that you figure could be an NCAA tournament team again and probably rank at the beginning of the season. So it's a heck of a get for LSU and Will Wade and as they try to move forward, and there's still question marks, but you know, they were able to overcome that and get this player. Now people are going to say, oh, you know, what are they, you know, how are they getting him? You know, and, you know, those are natural questions to ask. But, you know, at this point, you're like, okay, there has to be some evidence. There has to be some really solid evidence against Will Wade before you can say anything that's, you know, legitimate at this point. There's always going to be speculation, but, you know, they're moving forward, and you have to give them some measure of credit.
Talking with Scott Rabelais, columnist for the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, it's a tremendous pickup for them. Do you expect the rest of the guys? I know Javonte Smart has already declared, hey, I'm coming back. I'm fully committed. He's coming back for his sophomore season. That's a great get. We expect Skylar Mays and the rest of the guys to do the same. When do we expect them to make that decision? Or is there a deadline where they have to make that decision and be back in the fold and announce that they're coming back?
There is a deadline coming up. I'm not exactly sure what it is. I think it's sometime. It's sometime coming up in the next few weeks. You know, obviously the draft is, you know, obviously everyone knows they had the ceremony to announce the draft order, and that was, you know, resulted in the Pelicans getting the number one overall pick. So it's coming up pretty quickly in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, I think the expectation is, you know, if Will Wade's coming back to be the coach, that Smart the Mays, Taylor, and Williams will follow suit. Those guys are not. None of those guys are likely to be getting drafted this year. You know, a 2-round draft. You know, I think obviously Naz Reid will get drafted. That looks more like Tremont Waters is going to get drafted. I expect those decisions are going to start popping now them getting Watford and the smart decision.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Scott, let's talk a little bit about the baseball team. That's where you're in Hoover 4. D1 baseball projected field of 64 that was released yesterday has LSU currently right now before the conference tournament as a 2 seed in the Las Vegas regional where UC Santa Barbara would be the host. That would be the number 16 national seed that have projected right now. Look, a lot can be changed in between now and then. If this is one of those projections, how many games does LSU need to win, starting with tonight's game versus South Carolina, to host a regional, in your opinion?
I think you got to start with one. I think it's not so much how many games they need to win, Raymond, as how many games they can't afford to lose. And I don't think they can afford to lose tonight to a really, you know, mediocre South Carolina team. You know, obviously we all know South Carolina from recent years and them being one of the powers in the SEC. That is not this team. You know, they went 8-22 in conference. They hit like 208 in conference. They had an team ERA of well over 6 and like almost 7 in SEC play. Went, you know, 8-22 in conference. They it's like 28-27 overall. This is not a good team. And if you lose to a team like that in the SEC tournament opener, that would drop LSU to 34-23. I don't see them being a host. I see them being a 2 seed somewhere and getting sent wherever. I mean, the Las Vegas regional sounds pretty cool. I gotta say, but obviously the LSU fans, it's cooler that LSU is playing at home at the Box. So I think they gotta win this one. And then, of course, then that sets up a game with Mississippi State tomorrow night, who has a bye as one of the top 4 seeds in the tournament. And so that's a tough assignment. I mean, State is very good. But LSU, you know, won the series against Mississippi State this year. And then you're guaranteed yet another game. So I think if you can get by tonight, you're looking at the rest of it like, well, you at least want to go 2-2, you know. And I know, you know, beat, you know, somebody. And then, or even if you lose one of the double elimination games, then you can move forward and beat somebody else. But I think this game is everything to LSU's hopes of hosting a regional. I just don't think I think South Carolina, a loss to South Carolina, as poor a team as they are, would be an anchor on LSU's hopes of hosting a regional that they just couldn't overcome.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, Paul Menary makes the decision. He makes the announcement yesterday. Cole Henry, after being on the shelf for a month, he's going to get the start to open up the SEC tournament. How many innings do we expect to see Henry out there? I would assume he's going to be limited. He's going to be on a pitch count. And what do you think do you agree with throwing him out there in the game like that?
Well, I mean, if he's ready to go, yeah. I mean, you need to start somebody, and the way they set up the pitching staff, based off this past weekend against Auburn, they could come back with Eric Walker tomorrow on 6 days rest, and they could come back with Landon Marceau the day after that on Thursday. So they just want to come back on 2 shorter rests for those guys. Usually they get a week between starts. To be a slightly shorter rest, but not as much. Yeah, I think he's the guy to go with. I mean, you don't have a lot of options, and you want to get him back out there in a key game, and he is considered their best starting pitcher. Now, what kind of condition he's going to be in, you know, how much can they give them, effectively give them, I don't know. That's the big part of this. Velci would be able to throw a more tested, dependable pitcher in this situation, I think they would, but I think they're going to go with the best guy they have and then try to piece it together from there. He's not going to go very long. I mean, Menary said yesterday before the team left Baton Rouge, they're hoping to get 3 innings out of him, but he said, you know, he could pitch even less than that if they, you know, if they feel like, you know, he's not physically up to the challenge. And of course, he could get knocked around, and you don't expect he's going to give up a lot of hits to South Carolina. Though they have some hit with some power. They got four guys. They do have four guys who have over have double digit home runs on their team, but they don't hit for average. But you know, walks are also, of course, part of the game. And he could not have command and stuff like that. So that's what's so scary for LSU at this point. It could be great, and it could be really shaky, you know, with Cole Henry coming back pitching for the first time since April 19th.
We're on with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, can this LSU team depend on Zach Hess to come in and not give up home runs during the SEC tournament?
That's a great question. That is a little concerning, and it's become a pattern with an alarming pattern from LSU's perspective, giving up a home run in five of his last six appearances. He throws the ball hard. I mean, he's got mid 90s velocity. That's 97. The pitch before the 2-run home run he gave up to Auburn on Saturday that tied the game and sent it to extra innings. And LSU eventually lost. But as people know, if you follow baseball, what comes in fast can leave very fast, too. He's talking about, obviously, he's disappointed about it, talking about Hess. He was talking about yesterday about his pitch sequencing and how he needs to be just better, you know, mechanically, you know, his approach to an at-bat needs to be better. You know, he gave a bunch of 0-2 hits, you know, and you can't just throw something right over the plate on 0-2. You know, you want to be aggressive, but you got to be smart as well. So, can they trust him? It's a really good question. I think they really want to, but I'm not sure that they're going to put him out there tonight in a safe situation. I think you might be more likely to see like Todd Peterson. Especially if like Todd Peterson comes in the seventh, say, and things are rocking along pretty good, they might just, you know, go with him the rest of the game. You got to get to somebody, and you know, you got to get to someone dependable at the back end of it. Now, they also got a big lead. You know, if they're leading by, you know, 7-2, you know, going into the eighth, yeah, they might go with Hess. And another good thing going for LSU is the Hoover Met is well known as a big ballpark. You can hit home runs there. But it is you know, cavernous, you know, by comparison to a lot of SEC ballparks. So you can be a fly ball hitter, a pitcher, and get away with some things. That's why it's a good place for Eric Walker to pitch. He pitched such a good game here in 2017 against Arkansas en route to the SEC tournament title. So a really good question. I think Hess is someone they have to be concerned about, but he is very good, and he's got their best velocity and their best, you know, closer stuff. But got to stop giving up those home runs, man. You can't just keep serving them up like, you know, it's batting practice.
We're on with Scott Rabelais here of the Baton Rouge Advocate on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Scott, one final question. You know, you mentioned that South Carolina, they have some guys that have a little pop in their bat. What about the young man that they're going to be throwing out there on the mound? Is that a favorable matchup for LSU's lineup that has been hitting the ball better of late? Duplantis, Cabrera, Watson, and the bunch. Is that a favorable matchup for the Tigers tonight?
You know, I think just about any kind of pitching matchup is good for LSU at this point. I think they are hitting the ball better. Their averages are coming around. They're making good contact there. They're taking advantage of the mistakes the other pitchers are making, and you know, whether they get on with an error or walks, yeah, you know, they're starting to make those really hurt against the opponent. They played well. They hit the ball well against Auburn in all three games, and even the loss, you know, I think they were generally pleased with how the hitting is going. So I think, and especially you mentioned Duplantis, so, you know, he's like 9 hits away now from Eddie Furness's record. And, you know, so you can pretty much count on him to get a hit or two in a game now. So I feel comfortable about where else he's hitting is. It's always a little more of a crapshoot if it turns into a scoring fest and it ends up being if the other team scores 10 runs or something like that, it lessens your chances of winning. But I do like where LSU's offense is headed right now. feel a little more confident in LSU's offense right now than their pitching, which the pitching could be good, but there's a big question mark right now.
Scott, appreciate your time as always, brother. Enjoy being up there in Hoover. Hope you get a couple of rounds in today, at least one round of golf, my friend. And enjoy yourself, and we'll talk to you soon.
At least one. At least one. Yeah, I like what we're saying. Thank you.
Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate, covering the LSU baseball team up there in Hoover at the SEC tournament. Reminder, LSU baseball can be listened to live here tonight on 103.7 The Game. First pitch is scheduled, tentatively scheduled, for about 8 p.m. We'll take care of you. Tiger Rag Radio will be on tonight. That'll lead you into LSU pregame. And then first pitch from the SEC tournament as LSU takes on South Carolina. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, will Cody Schutz talk about the movie he watched over the weekend? Or wrestling?
Hey, we can
possibly,
do that.
Possibly. That's called a tease. It's called a tease. Right here on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. So what happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, just call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
Hey, Raymond, you know, I'm really glad that you're my friend.
Oh, thanks, Cody.
I feel like we have a friendship that'll never, ever
will
end.
Will it never end?
I feel like it'll never, ever end.
Do you just want me to let you in?
You need to let me in. We're obviously riffing on the Firefly Funhouse. We'll get to that in a second. Real quick, my thoughts on Money in the Bank, because
yes,
they are. It was a great show. We're going to work on a 5-star rating system here. I would have given Money in the Bank a full 5 stars. And that's not just me being a mark for WWE. It was a great show all around. I ended up, though, I have to give it 4.5 stars. It gets minus a half a star because the Brock Lesnar showing up, as good as they've kind of worked it out last night on Monday Night Raw, because now you've got Brock Lesnar. What guy is he going to go after? Is it Kevin Owens? I mean, excuse me. Is it Kofi Kingston? Is it Seth Rollins? We don't really know yet. Seeing Brock Lesnar with the Money in the Bank contract in his hands is also, it's just a funny sight. It makes you chuckle when you see the guy in WWE and he's, you know, carrying around this little briefcase. It's kind of funny too. But, you know, so overall, Raw, it kind of saved itself last night. And something you'll think is cool, Raymond, they introduced, Mick Foley was on Raw last night.
Nice.
Introducing a new championship title. He pulled it out of the bag. It's a green belt. It is the WWE 24/7 Championship. It has already had 3 people for the become the 24/7 champion. It is exactly what it sounds like. The belt must be defended 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If there is a referee present, you can be pinned. False count anywhere.
Anywhere.
They've done it before with the hardcore title. ECW, I think, had a thing like that, where their hardcore title, like guys were getting pinned in hospital beds and stuff like that. Last night, it started off with a scramble for the new belt. Mick Foley set it down in the middle of the ring, and the entire mid-card roster ran down the ramp and started fighting each other around the ring before Titus O'Neil, he does the Go Fish commercial, if you hear on the station here. He got to the belt first and was the first 24/7 champion. But then as he was running away up the ramp, was jumped from behind by Robert Roode, who then pinned him on the ramp and became the second ever 24/7 champion. And then as Robert Roode was trying to get in his Uber or limo or whatever to leave, R-Truth opened up the passenger door and there was a ref sitting in the passenger seat. And R-Truth jumped Robert Roode and pinned Robert Roode. And he is now R-Truth, the 24/7 champion. He drove off in the car with the belt. Gotta love WWE. You wish I was making that up.
I kind of do.
But that's a real thing that happened. But Firefly Funhouse, I want to talk about that because it was very short last night. We did not see an actual live cut of Bray Wyatt in the Firefly Funhouse. We only saw him on the intro and then quick cuts from last week's video.
So that means one or two things.
Okay.
That means, A, they did a short condensed version and they were able to produce the other segment without him,
right,
due to him welcoming his child into, right, the world. Okay.
There's a baby Rotunda.
Yes, there's a baby Rotunda. Or they did the short little teaser thing like that because he's going to make his debut within a week.
I think I like the second one. I think they're able to look at it now and say, oh, look, Bray Wyatt's no longer in the Firefly Funhouse. Like, it's
Where's
empty. Where is he at? And then maybe tonight on SmackDown, maybe next week on Raw, he pops up and finally makes his debut. Because this, not only was it the first time we didn't see Bray Wyatt in the Firefly Funhouse on the segment, but we also didn't see him at all.
You know what you could do? It just popped to my mind.
Okay.
Think like a horror movie. You know what you can do? At either SmackDown tonight or next week's Raw, just have those little kids that they had with the marker on their faces.
Right.
Let me in. Have them in the audience. Like, just rant, and they just don't say anything. And the camera pans to them, and there's like, oh, there's like the 35-year-old guy there with his kid, and he's jumping up and down because he's got his John Cena shirt on. And then right next to him is that little creepy kid that just has let me in, and he just stares at the camera. Like, that's what I would do to build it up and go, what? And then there are all these, like, little kids all the way around, all of his, like, little disciples. That's what I would do.
I'm excited, though. I think Bray Wyatt, this is gonna work. I have faith this will work.
Yes! Love it. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to bring on a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. The one and only Dan McDonald will join us to help us preview UL Baseball versus App State tonight at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, right here on 103.7 The Game.
You're there. Your happy place. Your go-to destination.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We will effort to try to get Dan McDonald on tomorrow. Had scheduling conflict, so we'll try to get him to possibly give us a recap from the Raging Cajuns tomorrow. Let's talk a little bit more about the conference tournaments, though. LSU baseball, UL baseball, and what's on the line. LSU right now is on the outside looking in of hosting a regional.
It's basically LSU, what's on the line. LSU hosting a regional is on the line for LSU. Making a regional is on the line for UL. That's kind of how I'm looking at these conference tournaments.
Right, because UL is behind the eight ball, right? They're playing in the single elimination round. There's no way for them to get an at-large bid. They're just not there, okay? So they're going to have to make the full gauntlet run, so to speak, and win the entire Sun Belt Conference tournament to punch their ticket to an NCAA regional. And even then, they're going to be more than likely a four seed in a regional. So they have everything on the line. They have no room for error if you're the Raging Cajuns. LSU, on the other hand, it's not as dire because, as we know, even if they lose tonight, they're going to an NCAA regional.
There will be a tomorrow.
There will be a tomorrow.
For now.
For the LSU baseball team. But for them, hosting an NCAA regional is still on the line. And hosting a higher seed and continually trying to build some more momentum to get hosting a regional and then hosting a better regional, because you don't want to host the regional and then have to turn around and play Vandy or UCLA in the second round, in the Supers. You just don't. So they have a lot on the line, so they can't afford to drop South Carolina. If they beat South Carolina tonight, that's 18 wins on the season. Okay, so 18 wins on the season. We talked about with Nick Suss last week of the Clarion Ledger. He says that's kind of the magic number to usually host an NCAA regional out of the SEC.
The way I understood, Nick, I think it was 18 regular season conference wins is what got you there. I don't know if beating South Carolina tonight and getting to 18 overall conference wins, I don't know if that guarantees a host spot. I think, if you're asking me, I think LSU needs to win two games. If they can win tonight and then beat Mississippi State, I think then they'll have a host spot locked up. And that's my thoughts. Maybe 18.
So you think they have to win tonight versus South Carolina.
Right.
And they have to beat Mississippi State. In order to lock up
a host spot where going into selection, what is Sunday, Monday, whatever day they do it on.
It'll be Monday. It'll be Memorial Day.
Going into that day, if LSU has a win over South Carolina and a win over Mississippi State under their belts going into that, I would think that that's locked up. If they beat South Carolina and then lose to Mississippi State in a good ball game, then I'll sit and watch with bated breath or look for those early leaks or reports on Twitter or something like that.
You don't think even if they do lose to Mississippi State and win a loser's bracket game, that would still give them another win?
Maybe. Maybe because Mississippi State's really good and you're into the double elimination. Losing to Mississippi State maybe doesn't hurt you
right as
much. So maybe so, yeah. But I'm not hot take here, right? If LSU beats South Carolina, beats Mississippi State, they're a lock. It's not saying much.
But I would say that. The lock is beating South Carolina tonight in the opening round as the 5 seed versus the 12.
Right.
And then if they can beat Mississippi State, a team that they won the series from, by the way, during the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, LSU won that series. If they can then beat Mississippi State, I think it's a lock. Regardless right. of what happens the rest of the way, if they lose the next two games and they're eliminated from the tournament, but they would have won two games and beat the 4 seed Mississippi State, a ranked team, I think that's going to be enough
right.
to get them. They'll have 19 conference wins. That'll be enough to host a regional. They may be 16, but that's worst-case scenario. I agree. Tonight, though, they can't lose. That's the whole thing. We can debate whether or not whether losing to Mississippi State and then winning another loser's bracket game will still get them an NCAA regional to host in Baton Rouge. That can be debated. What can't be debated is they have to win tonight.
Right.
They have to beat a very, as Scott Rabelais said, a very mediocre Gamecocks squad. So they have to at least get the one win. I personally feel like they win tonight, and then they can just win one more game, whether that's a winner's bracket or loser's bracket game. I think they're in. I think they host an NCAA regional.
It helps that you're LSU.
Correct.
It doesn't hurt by any means.
It also helps too, and I'm not saying these things go into the process, but typically the regionals tend to be regional. Speaking,
well, yeah, certainly.
Okay,
that's why Southern is going to end up in Baton Rouge if LSU
right.
hosts.
Southern's already locked up the SWAC. You know,
they're not going to send them to California or to Washington State when LSU was hosting a regional.
Right.
Although they did that a similar thing one time with LSU and UL. LSU was hosting regional, and they sent UL to, I forget where it was, but it wasn't, they didn't play in the same regional.
Correct.
And they could have matched up in the Supers, and maybe that even happened. I'm trying to, vague memory this morning.
So, you know, that's what you could do. LSU's in a far better spot right now than they were last year, because last year they needed the run all the way to the right. SEC Tournament Championship game, which they lost, to even get into to get into the regional, and they got into the Corvallis regional, right. which they ended up losing. In the championship round against the eventual national champs, Oregon State.
Can't be too mad about that. This is true, no matter whether it's fair or whether it's right or how it should be. I feel it's very true that if it comes down to, let's say you said the projection for LSU baseball is the Las Vegas regional right now. I think if it comes down to, and who did you say would be hosting that? I forget, but whatever small school you said would be hosting, like UC something or other.
D1 baseball has UC Santa Barbara.
Yeah, there you go. So if that ends up being the case, I think if you look at a very similar body of work or resume between UC Santa Barbara, isn't that the Gauchos? Aren't they like the Fighting Gauchos?
I'm not familiar with
I think they're the Gauchos.
What the mascot is for them.
But if you take that university and then you look at LSU, and the resumes of the teams are very similar. You could even say Santa Barbara might have a little bit better of a regional of a resume, so to speak. But I think a committee would look at it and say, yeah, we're going to go ahead and give the nod to LSU because they're LSU, and they're this, you know, over the last three decades have been a perennial team that have been around every year seemingly. Do we want to try to send people there to a marquee spot in the country for college baseball, or do we want to send people, you know, to a much smaller location, a much less to do venue, when really you want, you know, as many fans to come in and buy tickets to these things as possible? So I don't, you just can't overlook the fact that the letters on their jerseys and hats still are LSU. And so if they can just get close, I think that they gives them a good chance to go ahead and get the nod.
I would agree with that.
I mean, whether that's right or not, that's irrelevant. It just, the fact of the matter is that when it comes down to it, and I know it's RPI, but someone still has to rank the RPI. Like, I know you can say, like, well, the committee only goes by what the RPI says. If RPI says this is team number 16, then they get to host, and that's true. But then, you know, who sets number 16 team in the RPI? There's still all these things that come into it. So it's going to be interesting to see 2-0 in the SEC tournament. I think LSU's in for a lock. 2-2 in the SEC tournament, though, that seems to be the question. If LSU finishes 2-2 in the SEC tournament,
I still think if they finish 2-2 in the SEC tournament, I still think they host a regional. I think if you're NCAA, you want Baton Rouge.
You have to.
Right, because of the crowd that you're going to get. How many folks are going to be now?
12,000 plus every game.
Now, you heard how excited Scott Rabelais was about possibly going to Vegas.
he laughed.
He laughed. So maybe Rab has a Rab special when he goes out to Vegas, and we can talk about that off
air. Pretty sure there's some nice golf courses out there.
Because that's when I went to Vegas for my bachelor party. That's what we wanted to think about.
Scott Rabelais is a family man. He's going to play golf. I think I met him once.
I was not a family man when I went out because it was my, in fact, bachelor party. And we did not, in fact, play golf. Just leave it at that.
There you go.
Moving it on. Moving to four. So, that being said, you know, but you're right. I still think LSU, if they go 2-2, Cody, I think it's just two wins. I think if they would have swept Auburn and then won tonight, I think they would have been hosting a regional regardless. But they let the one get away, so that crept some doubt into some people. Okay, that's why you see D1 have them projected to be a 2 seed, right? But I think they're close. I still think they're close. So they win tonight versus the Gamecocks. They win one more game. Now look, Paul Mainieri and his staff and those players, they want to win the tournament, right? Let's be real for a minute. They're going in there wanting to win the tournament, and we talked about it early on the show, how dominant they really are. They play so well in Hoover for the SEC tournament. So don't be surprised if they do make a run, even if they do lose to Mississippi State. If they win tonight and they lose to Mississippi State. So the Raging Cajuns, though, it's tougher. You know, they got to beat a team, App State, that beat them twice.
Here we go.
In a three-game series earlier in the season, but they've been playing well. As I said before, the Raging Cajuns ended the season winning three straight weekend series, building up some momentum. But if you're the Raging Cajuns, look, this season has been marred by injuries. It's been marred by a lot of other things, inconsistent play. You'd like to make a run in the tournament, but I think if you're looking at their season in a whole, if they can just win one game, I think it's going to be a win for them just to win the one game and say, hey, at least they didn't get eliminated early. And maybe they can fight their way and make some noise, maybe upset someone along the way. You never do know. They do have talented players, Todd Lott, Hayden Cantrell, Hanson Monica, and others. But we'll see. Tougher task for UL, but so much is on the line for both squads. Cody, you wanted to say something.
Oh, I was trying to look and find it. LSU has won 6 out of the last 11 SEC tournaments, 08, 09. And 10, so 3 in a row, 8, 9, and 10 there. And then 13 and 14, and then in 17. So, just food for thought there for whatever it's worth. Mainieri's been at LSU for 13 seasons.
Yep.
This will be his 13th SEC tournament. In the last 11 out of those, he has won 6 of them. That's almost Nick Saban status as far as SEC tournaments are considered.
Boy, they play well. They play at another level. They really do. Let's just hope, if you're a Tiger fan, that Zach Hess doesn't give up a home run.
It's okay if it's 7-1, but don't give a home run when it's like 4-3, and there's a runner on third.
That's just his stuff, man. He has great stuff, but he gives up the long ball.
Exit velocity of 1,000 miles an hour.
He just does. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. I want to thank all of our guests that came on today. David Berry from the Lake Charles American Press giving us a preview of the Southland Conference baseball tournament, which begins tomorrow in Sugar Land, Texas. McNeese, Northwestern State, as well as Southeastern, are all competing in that tournament. Also want to thank Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate joining us, breaking down some LSU basketball and baseball for us. Tomorrow we got a great show. Dan McDonald has been rescheduled for tomorrow. He's going to give us a recap of what UL did at the Sun Belt Conference tournament tonight. He'll give us that recap early tomorrow morning. We'll also have the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, joining us, and our friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. So I have a terrific show lined up for you tomorrow. Reminder, we'll have the good brother Ben Love on later today. After him will be Tiger Rag Radio. You'll have that for the full 2 hours, and that will lead you into LSU pregame from the SEC tournament in Hoover, Alabama. First pitch is scheduled for 8 p.m., weather permitting and length of other games, three other before them.
I'm going to bring up the weather. Yeah, I don't even think about the weather. I just worry about the other games, right? Because if the weather starts to become a factor, this game wouldn't get in at all tonight, I bet.
No. So we got you covered. Bumper to bumper sports lead into Tiger Rag Radio, and that'll lead you into LSU pregame and then first pitch later tonight. Cody.
Yo.
LSU going to get it done tonight?
Yes. Tonight, I'm not too concerned. The only thing that worries me about tonight, or I guess the biggest thing that worries me, let me put it that way. Cole Henry getting the start, coming out and being lights out and looking like he's back in form. And, you know, he goes three strong innings, gives up, you know, one hit, maybe two, no runs, is looking good. And then, you know, understandably, maybe Coach Maneri or Alan Dunn, whoever, wants to take him out of the game for, you know, cautionary reasons or whatever have you. And then it all falls apart. LSU has a, you know, a 2-3 lead or something, and it's going great, smooth sailing. We have to take the starter out because, you know, we want to make sure we have him moving later on in the season. And then all of a sudden the wheels kind of fall off, as we've seen this season, in the sixth inning, the seventh inning. You give up a crooked number in the eighth, and next thing you know, you're down 8-3.
You're not going to see Zach Hess tonight. I think you're going to see Cole Henry pitch three innings. I think you're going to see what Rab said is right. I think you're going to see Todd Peterson and Devin Fondo tonight. And probably Matthew Beck.
I mean, I'd love to see it be 11-0, and we can throw Will Rippon and
Costello
and Aaron George and all those guys.
Let those guys eat up innings in the beginning of the tournament.
If it's 11-0,
you can save Peterson's, Hess, and all those guys. But I'd expect to see Cole Henry. I'd expect to see Matthew Beck tonight. To be honest, I just think you're going to have that relievers come in, eat up two innings. I don't think you're going to see Zach Hess because he pitched on Saturday. I think Maneri feels like he's going to need Zach, and he's going to need Zach a lot during this tournament if they're going to make a run. So if he can avoid it, I think he's going to avoid using Zach Hess. I think he's going to try to avoid using Todd Peterson, too. I think he may try to avoid that.
I could see Maneri if, let's say, Cole Henry goes his three innings.
If the game is in hand.
If the game's tied, I don't know what you do. If LSU has a lead, I could see Maneri going in the fourth, straight to Mikhail Hilliard and trying to get four or so innings out of him. I could see this because what other game? It's kind of how we spoke about the Auburn series. We thought maybe he'd get the start in the first game because when else are you going to throw him?
Right.
It's kind of a similar thought process I have here. If you don't get Mikhail Hilliard in here, you're really going to throw him, you know, because it's going to get to a point if you don't use him now where you're going to, if you continue to play and win, you're going to have to use him because you're going to be out of guys. So would you rather try to use him now if you have a little bit of a handle on the lead? I mean, it basically comes down to the bats. It all comes down to how this game shakes out.
If the lineup steps up tonight,
you say we're not going to see Zach Kess or Devin. If this game is 2-1 in the eighth inning, you're going to see all hands on deck.
You're going to see all hands on deck because a single elimination, they need the win to get an NCAA regional. So yeah, but if the game
go a million ways,
but if the game gets out of hands, you're going to see Matthew Beck.
Those other guys.
You're going to see Mikhail Hilliard may get some love too, just to keep his arm nice and loose.
I would like to see Mikhail Hilliard get a few innings in, you know, good innings. But I'd like to see him get some innings in if he can, but I don't want him in a pressure situation.
No, because he hasn't pitched well, so you don't want him in that situation. Tremendous show. We'll try to do better tomorrow, though.
We'll have a lot more to talk about still.
Oh, well, plenty to talk about in the morning. UL baseball, did they get a win versus App State? How about LSU baseball? Did they beat South Carolina?
Woo!
We'll talk about it tomorrow. Y'all have a great day. Up next, oh, that's right. It's the second week of our new golf show, Chip Shots with Rob Spires. Coming up next, right here on 103.7 The Game.